Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Ever wonder why it seems as if American electoral politics are exclusively the realm of the wealthy? Duke University professor of public policy and political science Nicholas Carnes has, and it spurred him to devote several years to investigating the topic. His findings can be found in a newly released book from Princeton University Press entitled The Cash Ceiling, Why Only the Rich Run for Public Office and What We Can Do About It. Professor Carnes joined me in studio recently to give us a snapshot of his findings. We're joined today by Professor Nicholas Carnes. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Carnes.
Thanks so much for having me.
I guess the first two questions are obvious because they're in the title of the book. Why are only the rich running for office and what the heck can we do about it?
Yeah, well, the book is really trying to understand why in a democracy where anyone can stand for election, only a very small slice of society ever does that. And in the book, I'm really trying to understand from an empirical perspective what keeps regular people from considering and running for elected office.
You touch on the fact that there's some conventional wisdom about that. Well, you know, working people, they got too much to do. They don't have time to run for office.
That's right. I love talking to people about this question because everyone has ideas and theories. And my job in this book is to test those and see which ones really hold water and which ones don't.
Is the phenomenon today different than it was 100 years ago?
That's one of the really interesting things that I find is that if you go back 100 years, members of Congress, maybe 2% of them had a working class job, a manual labor job, service industry job, clerical job, when they first got elected or they first got into politics. Fast forward to the 1950s, still about 2%. Fast forward to today, it's still about 2%. So this is actually sort of a rare historical constant that the people who run our government, who go on to serve in our political institutions, almost all come from white-collar jobs and pretty affluent white-collar jobs at that.
Probably goes back to the, not surprising we call them the founding fathers. They were fathers, all men and all white men of privilege who founded the country. And it looks like it's pretty much been that way throughout the history of the Republic.
That's right. And that's sort of where the book, you know, takes off and says, well, what is it about our political process that keeps regular people from holding office? And, you know, it can't be some recent development. We can't say, oh, it's the decline of labor unions or it's Citizens United, because this is something that stretches back just as far as we have data. And what the book argues is that it's really about the personal burdens associated with running for political office. So you talk to anyone who's ever run for elected office and they'll tell you it took a lot of time and energy and big personal sacrifices.
Right. It's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. I mean, if you run for the North Carolina General Assembly, right, you might be working 40 to 60 hours a week while you're campaigning, or you might be working 40 to 60 hours a week on your campaign. Now, if you're somebody who needs to hold down your job, who definitely needs your paycheck in order to make ends meet, right, you're just not able to say, well, I'm going to, you know, quit everything that I'm doing and volunteer for my own campaign for the next 6 months. That's just not within the practical means of most people. That's the single concern that most differentiates working class people from professionals. When you survey them and ask them, would you ever run for elected office? If you look at the people who are really qualified to do it, the ones who have working class jobs are a lot more likely to say, I just can't take the time off work to run for elected office.
Is there any indication that this is different anywhere else? I mean, I think about parliamentary systems and other Western European countries.
So this book is really focused on the U.S., but in some of my other research, I've looked cross-nationally at electoral democracies in other countries, and you see the same basic phenomenon there. It really seems like this is something common to countries that select leaders by having people campaign. Now, this isn't a bad thing. The book argues—
I was going to ask, is this a bad thing?
The book argues, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Democracy is, you know, still, I think, the best form of government human beings have come up with. But we need to recognize that it has an unintended side effect. It screens out people who don't have the personal means to run for elected office. And if that's an unintended side effect, it's something we can treat. It's something we can remedy. We can keep all the good of electoral democracy, but address this side effect.
That side effect clearly has consequences for the policies that we enact. I mean, the fact that we don't have blue-collar working-class folks in elected office is clearly reflected in the policies that are enacted.
Yeah, so the book presents a little bit of evidence on this point. You know, why should we care whether we're governed by people with experience in working-class jobs or people who have only ever been business owners and attorneys? And if you look at how a member of Congress votes or the kinds of bills they introduce or even the personal views they talk about in surveys, confidential surveys, you can see every time in both parties, the politicians who have experience in working class jobs really do bring a different perspective to economic issues. Former House Speaker John Boehner used to love to say on the campaign trail, "I'm a small business owner, and that's the perspective I bring with me to political office." I think he was telling the truth. Yeah. Politicians are people, too, and what they did for a living before they got into office does inform the choices they make once they're there. And that's true whether they were an attorney or a small business owner or somebody who worked as a manual laborer or service worker.
You think it's fair to say that we would have different policies in Washington today if 20% of Congress was inhabited by people of working class experience that they'd been, I don't know what, emergency workers or teachers or indeed factory workers? Do you think we'd have a different kind of Congress with different kind of policies?
I think that's probably right. That's really what the data suggests. I like to point to the example of Orrin Hatch, senior senator from Utah, a Republican senator from a Republican state, and he had this really odd habit that he would vote for expanding access to health care, not a traditional Republican issue. And he would get up on stage with Ted Kennedy
right.
and celebrate little victories in expanding health care access. Why is that? I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he paid his way through college and law school as a janitor and a night watchman. And he really understood what it was like to be without health insurance. And so even though his party and his constituents would really lead you to expect him to vote against the Democrats every time, he was crossing the aisle when it came to helping out people who don't have health insurance. And I think, yeah, if we were to expand the pool of politicians in both parties who had experience in working class jobs, I think you would see policy move towards the interests of regular working class Americans.
So what the heck do we do? You don't necessarily endorse, it seems from my reading of the book, some of the things that I would have normally thought of, like let's have public financing or higher pay for state lawmakers. Those aren't necessarily the solutions you're championing here.
That's right. Personally, I think both of those things are good ideas, but neither of them seems to increase the representation of working class people. So you look at states that have public financing in their elections, there don't really seem to be more workers in their state legislatures. Likewise, for states that pay higher salaries, what really seems to work seems to be programs that specifically target and support new candidates from the working class. On-the-ground programs that identify, recruit, train, and support new candidates. These programs exist in all 50 states. There are hundreds of them. But the ones that specifically target people in working class jobs really seem to build a pipeline of new politicians from the working class.
Where do these programs come from? I mean, are they public programs? Are they privately funded programs? How do we
So most of these have been programs started by pro-worker advocacy organizations. The AFL-CIO in New Jersey runs the oldest of these programs. It's been in operation since the mid-1990s, and it's a really simple model. The organization contacts all of its local affiliates and says, who in your ranks would make a great political leader someday?
Mm-hmm.
They bring those people to a training program, usually at Rutgers University. They teach them how to run effective campaigns. They support their first, bids for public office. And from there, these working class people have terrific political careers. They win 75% of the time when they run. And this particular program has won more than 700 elections in New Jersey, ranging from the most local offices all the way up to the state legislature.
Of course, in North Carolina, we're one of the, if not the most least unionized states. Is there another alternative or do we have at least still enough union members here in North Carolina that they could pull something like this off in North Carolina, do you think?
Well, I like to tell people that any organization that has regular contact with working class people can, if the two major political parties in North Carolina decided tomorrow that they wanted to start programs to identify, recruit, and train working class people, they could do it. This isn't rocket science. It just requires people who are already in positions of civic leadership to shift their focus and to try to encourage working class people to run. There are things regular citizens can do, too. So, if you're an ordinary citizen, one thing I encourage people to do is actually look at your ballot and don't just find out who's a Republican, who's a Democrat. Find out what they did for a living before they got into office. Are you one of the majority of Americans who doesn't have a single working class person on the top of your ballot? or do you actually have working class candidates running? And if you look at all the people running for office and you think the mix is not right, call your local political party and tell them that you appreciate all the work that they're doing on your behalf, but that you would like to see more candidates with experience in working class jobs on your ballot the next time around.
Well, it's a fascinating concept. I wish you all the best in advancing this cause, because it definitely seems as if it's one that is desperately needed in our country. And thanks for writing this book. I hope folks will check it out. It's called The Cash Ceiling, Why Only the Rich Run for Office and What We Can Do About It. Professor Nicholas Carnes, thanks for joining us. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Up next, a look at some of the realities of life that confront Latinx North Carolinians in 2018. Stay with us.